Check. Non-Marxist socialism? Check. Nationalism? Check. A spiritual calling for military expansion? Check. The need to make politics into a religion? Hostility to individualism? Check, check, check. To paraphrase Whitaker Chambers, from almost any page of The Promise of American Life, a voice can be heard from painful necessity commanding to fascism go. Crowley was an unabashed nationalist who craved a national reformer in the guise of St. Michael, armed with a flaming sword and winged for flight to redeem a decadent America. This secular imitator of Christ, who would bring an end to devil-may-take hindmost individualism in precisely the same manner that the real Jesus closed the Old Testament chapter of human history. An individual, Crowley wrote, sounding very much like Wilson, has no meaning apart from the society in which his individuality has been formed. Echoing both Wilson and Theodore Roosevelt, Crowley argued that national life should be like a school, and good schooling frequently demands severe coercive measures. Crowley's ideas garnered the attention of Willard Strait, an investment banker with J.P. Morgan and a diplomat, and his wife Dorothy, a member of the Whitney family. The Straits were prominent philanthropists and reformers, and they saw in Crowley's ideas a map for the transformation of America into a progressive democracy, the title of another of Crowley's books. They agreed to support Crowley in his effort to start the New Republic, a journal whose mission was to explore and develop and apply the ideas which had been advertised by Theodore Roosevelt when he was the leader of the Progressive Party. Joining Crowley's editors were the self-described socialist nationalists Walter Weil and the future pundit extraordinaire Walter Lippmann. Like Roosevelt, Crowley and his colleagues looked forward to many more wars because war was the midwife of progress. Indeed, Crowley believed that the Spanish-American War's greatest significance lay in the fact that it gave birth to progressivism. In Europe, wars would force more national unification, while in Asia, wars are necessary for imperial expansion and for the powerful nations to let off a little steam. Crowley constructed this worldview out of what he deemed vital necessity: industrialization, economic upheaval, social disintegration, materialistic decadence, and worship of money were tearing America apart, or so he and the vast majority of progressives believed. The remedy for the chaotic individualism of our political and economic organization was a regeneration led by a hero saint who could overthrow the tired doctrines of liberal democracy in favor of a restored and heroic nation. The similarities with conventional fascist theory should be obvious. One might defend Crowley by noting that such ideas were simply in the air at the end of the 19th century, a common set of responses to a common atmosphere of social, economic, and political change. And indeed, this is part of my argument. There were, of course, significant differences between fascism and progressivism, but these are mainly attributable to the cultural differences between Europe and America, and between national cultures in general.